You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
We welcome you to Jordan Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
It's the Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary. Here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Hello and welcome to the Wishbone Podcast, brought to you in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host...
I'm John Ringer.
John, we just witnessed the New Year's Day bowl games, including the Auburn versus Wisconsin Outback Bowl and the two big first ever semifinalists and or semifinals. And I think we saw quite a lot to talk about yesterday.
Yeah, I think we'll definitely have some inspiration and material today, even if a lot of it's schadenfreude kind of material. So.
Yeah, when we can't take joy in our own successes because we didn't have successes, it's always nice as a fallback position as an Auburn fan to take joy in Alabama's failure and misery, and we certainly have some of that we can lean on. So that's a very, very good thing, I think. I saw some people talking on Twitter last night that they actually were willing to trade Auburn losing to have Alabama, you know, not go on to play in the national championship game. I don't know if I could go that far. I don't think I could ever trade anything for Auburn for an Auburn win.
No, I'm not there. I would always pick Auburn winning.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much the way I feel. I mean, I understand what they're saying, though. I get that in the heat of the moment.
Sure.
Especially if you live in Alabama. You know.
Oh, yeah.
You don't want them to win again. And yes. it's worth almost anything. But I just can't have Auburn losing be the price. It's like selling your soul to get billions of dollars on Earth. I mean, yeah, there's that good thing, but do you really want to sell your soul? You know, so it's a little short-sighted. So, let's start out, I guess, the most important thing we have to talk about on this show is what happened to Auburn yesterday at 11 o'clock in the morning, my time, noon, your time, in Tampa. Now, we didn't get to do a preview show for various, again, logistical reasons of this holiday season. But what were you kind of expecting to be the challenges that Auburn would face going into that game, and how did that play out in real life?
Pretty close. I mean, I knew their quarterbacks were bad, and I knew Melvin Gordon was great. And so the big thing was on defense, you know, containing him and not letting him single-handedly beat you. And I knew their defense was solid, you know, doesn't have as many, you know, NFL kind of athletes as some of the other teams we played, but more fundamentally sound in a lot of ways, I think. So I knew they would be a good challenge for Auburn, but I felt like Auburn, you know, could go out there and execute and put up 30 points. I didn't think that was going to be an issue. So the biggest thing is, I think, you know, we wanted Auburn to go out and play a game without a bunch of boneheaded mistakes and without the defense kind of falling apart, and that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. You know, the late hits out of bounds, defensive players, you know, missing tackles and, you know, maybe lining up in the wrong spot and sometimes in the running plays. That especially the thing that kills me is after the third interception, Wisconsin basically waved a flag and said, "We're not going to throw the ball anymore."
Yeah.
And everybody knew it. And if you can't stop an I formation team that has basically told you they're not going to throw the ball anymore, that's really tough. I mean, that's like, oh my gosh, you know what's coming.
Oh yeah,
I mean, they're all, you know, and they did a good job with their offense and getting the ball to those guys in a little different ways. But it was a lot of the same kind of fundamental stuff, and Auburn couldn't stop it, and that was really disheartening, I think, and it was disheartening for the defense. They were out there in the field a long time. And then, you know, I thought the offense would execute well, and I don't know what was going on with Coates, if he was been sick all week or something else was going on, but you know, we played him, I don't know, 20 plays. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, Duke didn't play, so there was a lot of throwing the ball to Bray and not a lot to other, you know, not a much to other people, a little bit to Ozama and Davis and stuff. But so we didn't have the kind of explosive passing diversity like we had against Alabama. The running game was just kind of blah. I mean, Marshall didn't barely do anything on the ground.
No, that surprised me too.
And you know, Cap was solid, but it wasn't spectacular. So that was, you know, the offense was a bit disappointing. And then to me, the other big thing coming out of that game was I just thought the way Auburn played on both sides of the ball in overtime was really disappointing. So
it seemed very lackluster. I know they were giving effort, but mm-hmm. they just didn't seem that excited. I mean,
I think that's one of the big things in any bowl game is who's motivated, you know, and how much mm-hmm. do they care about being there and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think it was clear that Auburn, you know, they were playing and they were competing, but it wasn't like you didn't see the same level of intensity on the same planet of the level of intensity you saw in the national championship game last year.
Right. Right, no way. Or even in the Alabama game this year.
Yeah, no, we played at a much higher level against Alabama than we did in that game yesterday.
And yeah, that happens. I mean, I know, but it looked to me like we were playing a team that was on about roughly the same level in some ways as Kansas State again, except instead of a great receiver, they had a great running back, you know.
Yep.
And they had a pretty decent defense, and we scored a lot more points than we scored against Kansas State. But it magnified, again, the way that our defense collapsed after the Kansas State game and has never really seemed to recover for some reason. Mm-hmm. That we just couldn't – I mean, I thought actually – and correct me if I'm totally mistaken in this, but I felt like for a good portion of the game, our defense played better than I expected it to.
Well, I mean, the defense kind of hung around. The defense created turnovers. I mean, we intercepted them twice at the 5-yard line when they were kind of driving down the field. And the defense did kind of hold them in check for a while, but they weren't, you know, in the second half, Wisconsin figured out what they were doing wrong, and they weren't just feeding the ball to Gordon. Then they started doing that and ripping off big chunks. So
yeah, I don't know. I felt like the defense played better than I expected. I felt like the offense didn't play as well as I expected. I felt like there was almost no Nick Marshall threat of running. Mm-mm. He kind of was compelled by circumstance to run a couple of times, and it certainly didn't work out. I mean, think about this. Think about Nick Marshall in 2013 when he would go around the end and go for 20, 30, 40 yards.
Yeah. Yep.
We haven't seen that hardly any this year, and it was totally absent yesterday. I don't understand it.
We didn't even run the read option yesterday once, I don't think.
I didn't see it. It didn't look like it. I mean, and yeah, like you said, Cameron Artis Payne, he got stronger as the game went on, and it was interesting watching I was watching his numbers over the course of the game, and you know, like in the first quarter, early in the second quarter, Wisconsin's running back was averaging about 8 yards a carry, roughly. Mm-hmm. And Cameron Artis Payne was averaging about 3 yards a carry. Mm-hmm. And as the game went on, Cap's numbers began to get bigger. He was wearing them down a little bit. He was starting to, you know, punch holes up the middle and go mm-hmm. for 8, 10, 12 yards. But I just felt like our offensive line didn't seem to be doing the job we expected it to do. I don't know. Just the whole thing seemed very flat to me.
It did. I thought the offensive line didn't play their best game. They didn't get a ton of push. And I thought, you know, without Duke and when Duke and Coates are out of the game, the offense is really different.
Yeah.
You know, it's much easier to defend. The other receivers don't scare the other teams. And I think Marshall doesn't have confidence in a lot of the other receivers. And also, I think the play calling was, Gus and Red are great offensive minds and stuff, but I thought we're not even talking about overtime yet. The in-game play calling, did we even one time like do some kind of roll Nick Marshall out in the flat, kind of let him throw the ball and have a run pass threat. I didn't think we ever did that even.
Well, I wanted to ask you about, I know that Matt Millen comes across as a complete idiot, at least to me. I mean, he's the only color announcer I've ever heard that actually makes Brian, makes the Greasies sound like experts in comparison. But he was saying that, you know, cause you and I have talked about how Gus has always worked against tendencies and he set something up to set something else up and he gets you going one way or another. Well, Millen was saying that as he studied the film, we were like the most predictable on tendencies team he's ever seen. And I wanted to get your reaction to that. Do you agree with that? Or do you think he's just missing something or what's the deal?
No, I mean, I think what he means is in certain parts of the game, in certain parts of the field, Auburn likes to run certain stuff, whether the formation may look different or whatever, but it's the same play. And I mean, everybody knows this. Guess what play we're going to run when we go pace and hurry up after first down?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, everybody in America knows that. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that's one of the things we'll talk about the Oregon game later, but I really appreciated watching them is when they went up tempo and they got a first down and they hurried to the line, they ran something different every single time. Mm. And to me, if you're going to run the exact same play, unless the defense is like standing around looking at each other, there is no point in going hurry up. You just might as well stop.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not going to do something a little bit different, or good gosh, we've been running the same play 100 times. How about doing a play action off at one time?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or a Nick Marshall keeper or something. So I think we are very predictable sometimes. And also, I think we've both seen this where sometimes, and you saw it, there was a point in the second half of that game where Gus was like, that's it, we're running the ball.
Yeah.
And we're going to keep running the ball. And I think Auburn goes through phases where they get kind of stubborn and they're like, we're going to run it and run it and run it.
Yeah.
I mean, and the defense did need a break at that point. It was important to run the ball. And we were kind of capping the offensive line, started to impose their will on the other team. But in those times, I think Auburn is kind of predictable.
It's just disturbing to me because I feel like the things that we hang our hat on, the things that we're known for, I feel like we've got away from this year. And I mean, it's over now. The hay is in the barn and we've moved on to 2015 and we'll be talking about that in a couple of minutes. But I don't know. Can we just kind of get like an overview? What went wrong this year? What made us a, 8-5 team? If you could just point at like two or three critical things that made this team so much less than last year, and not just losing Trey Mason because we still had running backs.
The Trey Mason thing isn't even one of the top six or seven things I point at. I mean, to me, pass rush number one. In every game that Auburn lost, the quarterback could stand back there and make a sandwich sometimes. Multiple times they had, and that people want to say the secondary. If the quarterback has all day, I don't care who you got in the secondary, they're going to complete the pass.
Yeah.
So pass rush was a huge weakness for this team. And to me, that's number one on Muschamp's list, other than I would say number two after some discipline in terms of lining up in the right place and not making stupid mistakes. So, but pass rush is a huge issue for this team. And this in 2014 could not get, at Starkville, we couldn't get pressure on him. Mm-hmm. You know, at Texas A&M, we had no pressure on that kid. The kid was a freshman in his first game in a huge stadium full of people going crazy. We got no pressure on him the first couple of series.
Yeah.
And that game yesterday, that quarterback was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Joel Stave has the yips, and he's bad. And we gave him all day long sometimes to throw the ball. So to me, that was the number one. And so to me, that was a very common thread in all the games Auburn lost, was not getting pressure on the quarterback. And that was something we did last year and something I think we'll do better next year. But this year's team, it was a huge weakness. That pass rush was like an F. So that was number one. I think, again, we talked at the beginning of the year, one of our big concerns was about special teams. And I think last year, in 2013, Auburn made a lot of positive plays in special teams. And I'm not just talking about the Chris Davis thing. I'm talking about there were a lot of kickoff returns, good kickoff coverage, you know, field goals and punting were good. And this year, I think the punting was very inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, Bray had a couple of good returns, but I think the kickoff returns as a whole were the worst they've been in 6 or 7 years. And I think our kick coverage was bad. I think that the whole special teams area to me, and we had, you know, the block field goal against A&M return for a touchdown.
Yeah.
You know, and then the plays against Georgia, you know, hitting their kicker and stuff, hitting their punter. To me, the special teams took a huge step back, and that was another area that people always want to say focus on offensive defense. But I think Auburn's special teams were very weak this year. And then offensively, we were good, but I mean, we put up good numbers. We scored a lot of points. But I think, you never really saw the whole package execute at the perfectly high level other than, you know, a quarter here and a quarter there. That wasn't consistent enough. And then I think, we never got the whole thing in terms of running and passing and Marshall doing his stuff. It didn't all come together. So, and I think a lot of that, I mean, again, injuries on the offense more than other positions. I think early in the year, Coates banged up and missing Kozon or shuffling the offensive line around a lot. Those kind of things matter. But once Duke getting hurt later in the year, once everybody was healthy on the same page, the offense should have been a lot better. But that's me. That's the stuff I saw. What did you see?
In addition to what you said, I just felt like there was like an overall, I don't know the word. I mean, it just they never seemed they're very excited. They never seemed very, Reynolds Wolf sent me a message earlier this morning I thought was very apt, I'll mention, where he said that they just didn't seem to have a lot of joy.
Mm-hmm.
They just and I've been saying they seem very tentative. It's like they go out there and they're like, mm-hmm. Well, I guess we'll try this. Well, let's see what happens if we do this. Whereas last year they asserted their will. Mm-hmm. They established what they could do. And I'm gonna say this about Nick Marshall. We were defending him earlier in the season by pointing out that he was the one thing on offense that was really working well early in the year. But I'm going to amend that at the end of the season, especially the bowl game yesterday. I'm going to say this. If you're going to completely remove 50% of his game and not have him ever even give the threat of running, then if you're using him just as a passing quarterback, at that point you might as well just put Jeremy Johnson in there. Because, I mean, he did an okay job passing, and certainly that long pass was beautiful. But if, play after play, if you want the intermediate routes to be connected, if you want to have a passing game that's not just either very short or very long, then you might as well have the passing quarterback in there, because the threat of the run was never there at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know you don't want to yank your senior quarterback in his bowl game, but I mean, it just from a tactical standpoint,
I think at the end of the season, Nick Marshall was pretty good as a passer. And I think some of the passing yesterday had more to do with not having Coates and Duke than it had to do with him. But
I'm not having a problem with his passing yesterday.
You're talking about the running.
I'm just saying if you're not going to use the thing that sets him apart from Jeremy Johnson, then you might as well have Jeremy Johnson.
No, I agree. I mean, it certainly wasn't – we didn't take advantage of everything we had. And that's been one of the things that's been Gus's strength is figure out all the player strengths and use them in the best way combined to make the offense flourish. And it really seemed like we never did that.
Oh, here's the thing that absolutely had me pulling what's left of my hair out. A huge weapon in our offense, 2009, 2010, 2011, and 2013, but not so much this year, was the jet sweep.
Yep.
Wisconsin killed us with the jet sweep. We tried to do it back to them. And what happened? Corey Grant gained a yard, lose a yard. Corey Grant had a much better game as an up, as an up the middle I formation running back than he did doing his patented play.
Yeah, And Ricardo Lewis had a pretty good game running the outside.
Yeah.
It wasn't the same plays, but
yeah.
That'll be one of the big mysteries of this season, like how that play that is such a staple of Gus's offense that has been so effective for years, like that's completely not working now.
Yeah, I mean, it just was galling to see the play that we copyrighted basically and ran all over people in the past not working for us. It's at least not when our speed guy did it. And then Wisconsin comes out and gets like 200 yards on it.
Yep.
Oh, yeah,
that was frustrating.
Oh, that was frustrating.
See, and I saw teams run it in the playoff games yesterday, too. And I was like, oh, geez.
Mm-hmm. I don't understand how, you know, we had like an arsenal. Like if we were Hawkeye, we had a quiver full of arrows that used to work so well. And one by one, it felt like we broke our arrows and we were left with throw the ball deep or hand off to Cameron Artis Payne. It's just like we kept taking weapons out of our arsenal all season and all during this game. And
you're right in the sense that it was very predictable that other teams were going to focus on stopping that play and stopping the read option, for example. Mm-hmm. Auburn was going to have to be prepared to kind of attack what they were doing to counter it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
To line up like we were going to do the speed sweep and then take advantage of what the other team was doing. And because whatever you do on defense, you're creating a weakness somewhere. And so, but I never felt like we did that. That kind of chess game thing, it should be more like judo where you do something and they counter it, and then you counter it and take advantage of it. And I never felt like we could take advantage of what other teams were doing to shut down the read option or the speed sweep, either one. They just like took it away from us. They just like came up, took it out of our quiver in your example and threw it away. We never got anything out of it.
You know, and here's one more thought that from sort of the macro view that kind of makes me a little sick at my stomach to think about. You know, we were as high as number 3, I guess, in the rankings midway or later. Like after we beat Ole Miss into November, going into the second week, you know, we beat Ole Miss on November 1st. We did not win another game of consequence after November the 1st.
Sure.
And here's the thing. In years like 2009, where we had kind of a mediocre season, right, our big thing we could hang our hat on was, well, what we beat Ole Miss. Well, this year, I'm afraid, what do we got to hang our hat on? We beat Ole Miss. This year was a year where we were number 3 almost the middle of November, and we're going to look back and say, hey, we beat Ole Miss. In other words, this year went from a 2013 to a 2009 just in the last month of the season, basically. And so that's just unbelievable to me. It went from one of those top shelf years.
Yes.
So one of those, well, it wasn't a bad year, and maybe next year will be better kind of years. And, hey, we did have that one or two big wins, you know, overnight almost, it seems like.
It's true.
So
it's true.
This was not a 2013 rerun. This was a 2009 or 2011. Hey, we beat Florida, you know, rerun.
Sure.
So that's very disappointing. You want to look at some of the other bowls before we kind of dig into the future of Auburn football going forward?
Let's do that.
You want to start with the big ones or work our way up to the big ones?
Well, let's start with the big ones. Yeah. I know we're dying to talk about
it. Yeah. All right. So first up yesterday, this is funny to me. You had Oregon and Florida State. And here's the funny thing. In retrospect, if there was one of the four teams that probably didn't need to be there and instead it should have been TCU, it turns out it was Florida State, probably.
Oh, 100% it was.
And yet, I would have argued that Florida State was the one team. In other words, if you had to take teams out of the pot, I would have argued Florida State would have been the last one out, simply because it's hard to argue with not having lost a game in 2 years. Now, well, it turned out they were Marshall, which is what we kind of suspected, right? I mean, it turned out that, yeah, they were undefeated, but
they were a really good ACC team.
Yeah.
I mean, and here's the thing. What you said about taking them out was right. If we had the BCS and not the playoff, the championship game would have been Alabama-Florida State.
Absolutely.
And there isn't any doubt about that.
No, absolutely. And I would have, honestly, I'd have laughed if either one of them had gotten left out. I'd have laughed and laughed and laughed, but I would have felt it was an injustice because based on the system that we had, it has to be the totally undefeated team. There's no way a Division I conference champion when there's nobody else undefeated, right? You know, what happened?
You're not getting left out if you win one of the Big Five.
Yeah, right. In 2004, there were two other teams ahead of us that were undefeated. Florida State was the only undefeated big-time conference champion. Yep. So they were in for sure, and then Alabama was the number one team. So there's no doubt whatsoever that it would have been Alabama and Florida State. Now, that being said, what a difference it makes using a different system, huh?
Well, and I think to me, this kind of validates the committee approach a little bit because they were pushing Florida State down.
They were.
They saw the reality of this, that Florida State was good but not the best team. And at one point, Florida State was fourth, and clearly they should have been left out and TCU should have been in. I don't think there's any doubt about that, that probably that Baylor and TCU were both better than Florida State. So,
if they had still used the old system, would Florida State have been number one or Alabama number one at the end of the year?
Florida State would have been number one.
Isn't that interesting?
And because of the human voters. I mean, think about it this way. That it's not about the computers. The human voters would have left
the undefeated team.
The undefeated team number one and never moved him down.
Right, right. Well, so Oregon came out there and just carpet bombed them, just blast them back into the Stone Age. Well, I mean, I didn't see that coming. I actually thought Florida State was going to win the game just because of, I mean, you know, we've always talked about Oregon. They have a system, kind of like us, although their system this year was working and ours wasn't. But other years it's been the other way around. That's fine. They have a system, and I felt like Florida State had the athletes to overcome that system, kind of like we did in 2010 against Oregon. Mm-hmm. So what did you see Oregon do, or was it just that Florida State was that poor and had been disguising it?
I mean, I think this Florida State team is a very, very pale imitation of the Florida State team that Auburn faced last year.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that team would beat this team 100-10 or whatever, that Florida State team.
Absolutely.
So I think they're not nearly as good on the defensive line and at linebacker as they were last year. They were very stout. And then I think they missed the other big wide – they have two other wide receivers who are both playing in the NFL now, and they really missed Benjamin and that other guy. So it's really come down to the defense isn't nearly as tough. And they had a couple of guys in the secondary going too. So the defense isn't nearly as tough. A lot of teams moved the ball on them. A lot of teams ran the ball on them. And so I felt like we were going to move the ball on them. And so the way Florida State wins these games is, you know, even these mediocre ACC teams were moving the ball on them and scoring, you know, 28 points, but they could always score 35 or whatever.
Louisville was too.
That's what I'm saying. And that was enough.
Mm-hmm.
So in Boston College did it. So, you know, but the difference was, you know, Oregon is, you know, clearly the best offense in the country right now. And they were going to, you know, easily go out and score, you know, 45 points or whatever. And so Florida State had to be able to keep up in a shootout. And as soon as they started turning the ball over, you know, they kind of, like you always say, they lost serve and that was it.
Yeah.
And then they got behind, they started pressing. And then things got really from the perspective of people like us who hate Florida State, then things got really fun.
Because they quit.
Well, and even before they quit, things fell apart. And they kind of got their pants pulled down on national TV with the turnovers and then the whole Jameis Winston falling backwards, flopping and throwing the ball up in the air to the defender.
That was glorious.
That was absolutely one of my favorite football plays of the last 20 years.
Absolutely.
I'll never forget that.
Oh, that was – yeah, that was – it was somebody – that was Manti Te'o's girlfriend made a tackle. That was beautiful. Oh, man. It reminded me of the Florida game where we when we beat Florida in, 2006?
Mm-hmm.
Remember? And we sacked their non-Tebow quarterback. I can't even think of his name anymore.
Was it Leak?
Yeah, Chris Leak. Yeah, we sacked him, and remember, he fumbled backwards, and we ran it in for a touchdown. That reminded me of that, although in this case, it was by himself.
It was much more humorous.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh. And the ref falling down, too, that was the other great part.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, Oregon, is a really, really good team. They had one bad week where they lost a good Arizona team at home, but they played a tough schedule and beaten everybody pretty solidly. And their quarterback is so great. Mariota is so excellent. I mean, he has 30 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. And here's the other thing.
Yeah.
We had to talk about problems with Auburn. Think about all the penalties and all the turnovers and stuff that Auburn has had this season. I think Oregon has – but I'm going to look this up to be sure. Oregon has like 7 turnovers all year.
Wow.
The whole season.
Wow.
Okay? Auburn had like, 8 in 2 games.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, that kind of thing is just like ridiculous.
Well, we've always known that Oregon has the potential to do something like this. And every year, if you have any knowledge at all of college football, every season, as the season progresses through September and October, you have to keep one eye on Oregon. What are they doing? Do they look like are they a hoss this year? Do they really have it going on? Or are there certain weaknesses? In 2010, everything came together for them. Other years, certain things have happened. Now, the thing about Oregon is this. They, if they're one of those teams, they're kind of like, Florida was like this in the earliest days under Spurrier, like 1990, 91, 92, and 93. Mm-hmm. Florida was like this under Spurrier. If they caught you, remember this? We used to talk about this. If they caught you, they'd kill you like 50 to nothing.
Yeah.
But if you could stop a couple of things they did, you could beat them. And maybe beat them badly, because Tennessee did that to one of those Gator teams
earlier. You got
to
kind of muddy it up a little bit against them and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But
the other thing, I think one of the key differences is this particular Oregon team has much more of an inside running game.
Mm-hmm.
I think that big freshman running back makes a big difference for them. Yeah. I think some of the other Oregon teams have been too finesse.
Yes. Too and little and quick. Too McCaleb and not enough Trey Mason or something.
Right. And so this team has some guys that are more inside. So I think it's that combined with, Mariota being so great and their level of execution being so high.
Mm-hmm.
And defensively, they fly to the ball.
Yeah, they impressed me on defense how they were able to stop the power things, not just the finesse things, but they were able to oppose Florida State's power with their own power on defense, and that surprised me and impressed me for sure.
Well, I mean, after watching the Auburn Bowl game, to turn around and watch that game, but to see the Oregon guys, how fast they were to the ball and how many of them got there every time was really kind of depressing. Because I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't have – they have really good players in defense, really fast, but they really, really are flying to the ball. So they don't. I don't think they have they're still not. They don't have a defensive line as good as some other teams that Auburn played this year. But they have very good secondary people, and they really come to ball hard. So the other thing is they play offense like you and I wish Auburn would play. The way they push the tempo and the way they execute and the way they take advantage of the weaknesses, whatever it is the defense is giving you, they're just going to take it and take it and take it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I know. I feel like we have the potential to do that, and I just don't understand, especially this year, why we just kept standing on the brake pedal.
Yeah.
We did it a lot.
I never understand that.
I know. Well, all right. So basically, I think what we can take from the Oregon game is if they go into the national championship game and everything's working and they can't be slowed down, they should win. I think they should win going away. But, like I said, teams like that, if you can, like you said, muddy it up and everything, then you got a real game. And I think, like, for example, in 2010, Oregon was rolling along and Nick Fairley muddied things up considerably for them. And that was why they lost as much as anything. The other game. Oh, my goodness. Alabama.
Fire Lane Kiffin. Fire Kirby Smart.
Fire Nick Saban. Alabama ended the SEC's run of appearances in the national championship game. Shame, shame, shame. We had it going on all these years, and Alabama has to mess it up for all of us. I'm trying to get them back for the things they said about us last year. We were, at least we made it,
It's true.
We were in the national championship game, and we would have won it 15 seconds before it ended, if not for, how it played out. Alabama's not even going to represent They will not even be in attendance unless they buy a ticket like everybody else.
That's the great part. I think a lot of them already bought a ticket.
Non-refundable travel reservations.
If you want to have some fun, get on eBay the next couple of days. Get on eBay and see if there's a whole lot of – here's what you do. You go on eBay and you look up national championship game ticket and you see if the seller's location is like Tuscaloosa, Birmingham, Huntsville. You're going to see a lot of North and West Alabama locations represented on eBay this week. I guarantee you.
So, yeah, we saw in the Auburn game, though, that the Alabama defense wasn't the same level it was in 2009, 2010, 2011. It just wasn't. It's not the same. That defense, a really good offense can move the ball against them and score against them. And Ohio State has really good offensive players.
Oh, well,
they're not the slow, pondering Big Ten team that people think, oh, it's Ohio State, ha, ha, ha.
They're Florida North. Look, there was one difference. There was just one difference between that game and the Iron Bowl, and that is that Ohio State was able to play just enough defense to keep Alabama from scoring 55.
Well, and I would say the other part of that is Ohio State only kicked two field goals. They converted their other red zone opportunities.
Yeah.
Well, and you're right.
At the beginning, it looked just like the Iron Bowl.
It did. But you're right. The other part was they played better defense. I mean, they really did. They played good, solid defense. They took Cooper out of the game almost completely.
Mm-hmm.
He completely disappeared. Yes. They basically said, other people got to beat us.
Yeah. And then they were able to slow down, if not completely stop, that running game. Look, if we had played a modicum better of defense than we did against Alabama, we would have beaten them 44-38 or something.
That's right.
I mean, we scored more points on Alabama than Ohio State did.
Yes.
But we just couldn't keep them from ringing us up. So, this was not a world-beating Alabama team.
No, it wasn't.
And if we'd had any defense, we'd have won it. So, what do you make of Alabama and their offense and Kiffin and everything now? I mean, are they going to come back and do the same thing next year? Or are they going to – is Saban going to fall down?
No, I mean, I think they're going to – they were competing for the national title. Clearly what they're doing worked to get them there. And they'll mess with some things. I think Kiffin was good for them in this way, that in 2014, 2015, you can't play that kind of old school SEC football and expect to win 10-9. You got to be able to score 30 points every week.
Mm-hmm.
And with Kiffin coming, their offense got to the point where that was very doable for them. So I think that part was really good for them. And I think he's going to hang around and keep doing that. I think it's going to be different. They're going to lose Cooper.
Thank goodness.
I'm not going to miss him a bit. Yeldon, Landon Collins, Blake Sims, a few other guys. So, those guys, DePriest has been there forever. Won't miss him. So, but Landon Collins is he's the best player in their defense for the past couple of years. He'll be gone. So, but offensively, it's going to be a lot of the same. They're going to keep spreading it out and throwing the ball, and they'll have Derrick Henry next year, and they'll ride him more probably. But I think they're going to have to keep doing that. So I think the biggest thing, if you're an Alabama fan, you should be concerned about is, against the good offenses, their defense has gotten rung up the past 3 years or so.
Yeah.
I mean, the issue is a lot of the teams in the SEC aren't great offenses. But against the good offenses – the really good college football offenses. And I think Oregon would have scored 55 on them, honestly. So
yeah. I know, in a way, I almost wish that we could have seen Alabama crushed under the Oregon machine. But I'd rather have better safe than sorry, Let's just go ahead and eradicate them now so we don't even have to worry about it. And, I mean, I actually thought Alabama and Florida State were going to win, and I was going to be sad with every game yesterday. So I really got my best possible outcome in both of those games, and it almost made up for the 11 o'clock game. So,
well, it didn't make up for it, but I was thinking this morning, like, we really, like, light the bonfire of schadenfreude, kind of dance around it and enjoy the glow. It really was nice.
We had a flamethrower of it yesterday. It was fantastic. The two teams we despised the most, particularly this season, went down in
flames. And I can't say how much I appreciated Florida State getting, not just losing, but getting embarrassed. You know what I'm saying?
And then embarrassing themselves on top of that.
Yes.
By handling it poorly.
They handled it poorly, and then they just completely melted down. Yeah. Like this team that knows how to win and has all this championship composure, and they're, you know, they have all these comebacks. They know what to do when they get behind, and they melted down like a bad candle in that game and just disintegrated.
They did. That was great. It was great. It was great. I'm glad that it worked out that they played each other the way they did, because if it had been Alabama and Florida State, one of them would have had to win.
That's right.
Now, so,
right. It was the best outcome that way.
Yeah, it worked out. So now we get to sit back and just enjoy Ohio State versus Oregon. And I kind of want Oregon to win just because, you know, they were likable and they're neat. And I hated that they had to be the team we beat in 2010. I would have liked to have been a team I don't like, you know, to.
Sure. No, I'm all for Oregon. Yeah. I'm not in love with Urban Meyer.
No.
And the Big Ten either. So I just assume they either lose.
Yeah. You want to do factoid of the week?
Let's do it.
Hit it.
Factoid of the week.
Factoid of the week.
All right. I've only got about three little factoids rather than one big factoid this week. But I'll run these by you. One is that since 2001, and not counting national championship games, just regular bowl games, you know, since 2001, Auburn has lost two bowl games, 2005 and yesterday. Both were to Wisconsin. Both were in games coached by Barry Alvarez. And both times he was not expected to coach another game for them. How weird is that?
So weird.
It's so weird. All right. Little factoid number two. Auburn has still not lost to Alabama in a year that we won 9 games.
It's true.
By losing yesterday, if nothing else, we kept that streak alive. A 9-win Auburn team never loses to Saban.
Or Alabama at all.
Because we've 9-win Auburn teams have lost to Alabama.
You're right.
9-win Auburn teams have never lost to Nick Saban.
Okay, that's what it is.
Yeah. And finally, do I have this correct? Nick Saban is 8-8 in bowl games.
I believe that's correct.
I think I saw Colin Coward tweeting that yesterday, that Nick Saban is 8-8 in bowl games. And here's an addendum to that factoid. What is Nick Saban's record at Alabama in Sugar Bowls?
Boy, in the Sugar Bowl, not just in that building. I think it's 0-3, right?
0-3.
Mm-hmm.
0-3.
Because it's Utah, Oklahoma, and that game.
Yeah. All right. So there's my factoid of the week. Let's see. Listener questions?
We got a couple.
Okay.
I guess one I want to throw at you is, was the SEC, how strong was the SEC as a whole?
Well, you know, that's a good question, because think about it. The SEC West, Arkansas won, and Texas A&M won.
That's it.
We didn't see that coming.
Nope.
Let's jump back to about October 7th, okay? About October 7th, 8th, somewhere in there. If I had told you the only SEC West teams to win bowl games would be Arkansas and Texas A&M, what would you have said?
Well, Arkansas I could see coming 100 miles away, but the rest of them, I felt like Ole Miss was in trouble.
Yeah.
And I think that at the end of the year, they were clearly not one of the best SEC teams. They were, you know, 7th or 8th or whatever.
Yeah.
And TCU was a top four team. I felt like that was a bad matchup for the SEC. Mississippi State, you know, I mean, Georgia Tech was really good at offense this year. Mississippi State should have been able to beat them, but they didn't. They didn't get it done. That's another team that, again, you know, they were a bunch of really good teams, but not a bunch of great teams. I mean, this was not 2010. Where the best, you know, six teams in the SEC could beat the other top six teams around the country head to head by 20 points a game. I mean, there's not a lot of difference between, you know, say Alabama was the best team in the SEC. There's not a lot of difference between them, you know, Ohio State, TCU, Baylor, Florida State. You know, I think Oregon is kind of step up. But I think the difference between like Auburn, Georgia, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, you know, Missouri, and then like some of the second tier teams, the other conferences. I don't, you know, you whether Arizona or UCLA or Wisconsin or whoever. I don't think there's a lot of difference. Everybody's about the same.
Yeah, I think that when we went into the season, everybody was talking about how great the SEC West was. I mean, understand how things evolved. I mean, at the beginning of the season, you figured Alabama's going to be a contender. We thought Auburn was going to be a contender. We didn't think A&M would be, but Mississippi State and Ole Miss kind of emerged. We knew they were going to be good, but they really emerged as like top four teams there for a while, which was surprising. You know, and like you said, you could see Arkansas getting better and better. So it was to me, it was a matter of all of the West had to get better to compete with each other, but they all kind of rose up to a level of a 7, 8, 9 rather than everybody being mm-hmm. a 10. Mm-hmm. So instead of, you know, in some conferences and some divisions, you have like a 10 and an 8 and a 4 and a 4 and a 2 and a 1, you know?
Yeah.
And the SEC West just turned into like a bunch of 8s or 7s. Yep. 7s or 8s.
That's right.
And then, of course, when our defense collapsed, when Ole Miss, you know, their good receiver got injured, unfortunately, when, you know, Mississippi State started revealing that they were Mississippi State after all, when A&M had all the issues that they had going on, and their defense kind of exposed itself. I just think, you know, it wasn't that it was entirely smoke and mirrors, but there were just a lot of factors that were kind of variables, and that it could have worked out that the whole SEC West were 8s, 9s, and 10s, but it really just kind of evened out that they were all kind of above average, but not great, I think, really. So that's kind of how I saw it. How would you evaluate how the SEC and then particularly the West played out? I mean, were we just all completely mistaken in August or what?
No. Yes, in some ways. I think the SEC, you know, winning or competing for the national title has kind of disguised some of this. I think mm-hmm. we knew the SEC was going to take a step back, losing all the quarterbacks and stuff from last year.
Oh, absolutely.
And all the other good players. And it just did. But no, we're only seeing it now.
Yeah.
I mean, I think what we're seeing now is, wow, look around the West and, you know, like you said, the difference between the West team, and it was kind of disguised in the regular season because the West won a bunch of their non-conference games and looked really good,
mm-hmm.
you know, but you saw it in the bowl games when they played even competition, mm-hmm. you know, they didn't do that well. I mean, LSU looked like crap. Ole Miss looked bad. I mean, but Ole Miss was who they were. They could never run the ball this year. They were very one-dimensional on offense, and Bo Wallace is schizophrenic. He's up and down and up and down and up and down, and you never know what you're going to get out of him. So I think those were three things that were like, yeah.
And LSU was a team that lost 41-7 to us. So, I mean,
that's right.
They had their moments when they looked better versus worse, but they were never a great team by any stretch. Yeah.
No, but I think perception is, well, they're a middle-of-the-pack SEC West team. They should be as good as anybody in the country. And the reality is they were kind of a mediocre team.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so I think – but I think you're right. I think that a lot of it was just – as a whole, the SEC was down. I mean, I think the – even like, you know, the bottom of the SEC, Vanderbilt is much worse than they were over the past few years. And
no question.
You know, so I think the bottom half of the SEC was weaker than they've been in other years too. So
mm-hmm. –
anyhow, I think that's a lot of it, and we'll see if it gets better or if everybody else has kind of caught up with us now. So,
yeah.
Our next question is from Ryan Starrett, who says, will this be the shortest spring ever since we get to enjoy basketball, not counting down the days to signing day or A-Day?
I have been enjoying the basketball, and they've won, like, what, 3 games in a row or so? And that win over Xavier was really impressive. Now, I didn't see how the Georgetown Xavier game ended. Did you know? Did Xavier?
I can't remember.
I can't either. But I was. That was like a sad, happy game because on the one hand, you know, we root for Georgetown, but on the other hand, you kind of want Xavier to win and make everybody look, you know, make Auburn look even better. I guess, you know. So, but I guess right. In basketball, it's not as important because 64 teams get in the playoffs as opposed to 4. So. You know, you just want to be one of the 64. So,
and again, I'm still not at the, I think we're going to get in the tournament.
Oh, I know.
I'm just excited that it's fun to watch. We're competitive.
We're competitive.
I'm delighted.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, it will be a quick spring and man, this is something I wanted to mention a minute ago and I forgot. I can't remember a season where we knew there was going that the team was going to look so different in every phase of the game the next year. I mean, even when Gus came in last year and we got Cameron Artis Payne and Nick Marshall, we still had, you know, Jeremy Johnson was, we knew he was going to be there. Mm-hmm. We had Corey Grant already. We had, you know, there was a lot of continuity that Gus just kind of moved the pieces around, but we already had. But next year, we're going to have a completely different quarterback, a completely different set of running backs. I mean, mm-hmm. a completely different stable of running backs.
Yes.
Other than Duke, the receivers will be mostly different than what we've kind of what we've mostly seen. I mean,
that's right.
And then with Muschamp, the defense, please Lord, will be completely different. So it really will be almost like a completely different team next year than what we've seen the last few years.
They will be fundamentally different, and I think that's a good thing. I think we need to shake it up some, especially on defense. I'm ecstatic about that. But in our offense, you're right. I think it'll be different. I think a lot of Auburn fans who have expected Auburn to only have, you know, a running quarterback and to, you know, have a quarterback that keeps the ball a lot and runs it are going to be surprised when, you know, Jeremy Johnson throws the ball 35 times a game next year and spreads the ball out that way.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, after this season, I'm ready to just do something a little bit different. I mean, I know that what we did has worked pretty well, but we didn't do it this year. I mean, we just didn't look – we did not look – gosh, how many times have we said over the course of this season that this year's team was not the 2013 team? And by 100. The and by the end of the year, I mean, there's just no doubt they didn't. They didn't. It, I don't know.
And so, I mean, to me, I look forward to them shaking it up. Look forward to them playing. The biggest thing is I want Auburn to go back to play more mistake-free football. You know, I want Auburn to play, you know, attack the other team and make big plays and stuff, but I want us to play football without making a bunch of mistakes, boneheaded mistakes on both sides of the ball.
Absolutely. Oh, man. Yeah, it's one step, two step forward, one step back, you know, is the, is the, somebody, when we scored that one touchdown on a, on like a long drive, after overcoming a couple of penalties along the way, somebody on Twitter said that was the perfect Auburn drive. A long pass, a long run, and a long penalty, you know, or something, something like that. I'm like, yep, that's pretty much it. So
there you go. There you go.
Well, any other questions?
That's so true.
Any other questions?
No, I mean, a lot of them were very specific about bowl game stuff. So
we messed.
It's fun.
That's all my fault. I messed up our.
No. We're good. I'm excited we got through it today to talk about the stuff. So. Other future news and discussion about Auburn.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what we were touching on there is that we're going to have Jeremy Johnson and we're going to – what do you see? I mean, we've talked a little bit about this before, but what do you see in the backfield this fall? I mean, is it going to be Javon Robinson is going to be the man and then Rock kind of the change of pace and –
Well, where the heck was Rock yesterday? Is he hurt? Is, you know, is he in trouble? I know – in bowl games that don't matter, I get that we want to play the seniors, give them every touch. But there were clearly times during that game we could have played Rock a play or two.
That's a good point. I didn't think about it. We just
didn't play him at all.
I mean, Cameron Artis Payne got a lot of carries, but he and Corey Grant were the only backs, weren't they?
Yes.
As far as I know, they were the only two that touched the ball.
And it may have been purely the same way we were trying to get Bray the ball. You know, they're the seniors. We're trying to Nizama. We're trying to give them a good going out party kind of thing.
Yeah.
But you know, there were clearly times during the game when Cap I thought needed a blow and Rock could have come in and made some plays. So
just a change of pace, at least something different.
That's right.
Throw the Wisconsin defense off.
I think it's going to be a competition between Javon Robinson and Rock Thomas, and one of them will end up being the main guy, but the other one will be there and get a lot of carries too, I think. So.
What about Peyton Barber?
I don't know. I mean, I think he's going to be there, but Kerryon Johnson too will be coming in, but I think it's going to be Javon Robinson or Rock, one of those two. And then I listened. There were tweets last night where maybe think Duke is leaving.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What did you hear?
Well, it was something he was tweeting, the other people retweeted, where he was saying, like, I got to make sure I take care of my family or something. So that made me think, like, he's gotten away from the team and he's gotten back amongst his people or whatever, and now they're like, man, you got to go pro. that's silly for you to come back or whatever. So we'll see. And then there was a tweet this morning from Chris Frost saying it's tough saying goodbye or something. And he could have been talking about saying goodbye to the seniors, but he could have been talking about him leaving. So,
Do you think Chris Frost is leaving? Is that what you mean? Or do you mean?
Yes. I mean, I think he and McKenzie both are on the fence about leaving early for the NFL. Whether I don't see either one of them as a high draft pick.
No, I don't see either one of them getting drafted.
They would be a fringe draft prospects to me, I think.
Absolutely.
And maybe Frost would test well in terms of the speed and agility drills and stuff. But I think when you put in the tape and watch Auburn's games, there are games where he's, you know, makes a lot of plays. Other games where he just disappears and doesn't do anything. So it's tough for me to watch that and think, man, that guy's an impact NFL linebacker. So,
oh yeah, I just don't see. I think that they're desperately needed on our team, but I just don't see how either one of them gets drafted. I don't, honestly.
So, but Duke was suspended for the bowl game, and that was, you know, the right decision because he's violating team rules or whatever. But I think it's tough to turn around and, you know, that he was supposed to come back next year, and hopefully he will, but I think it's not a done deal until he's there for spring practice.
Wow. So. Okay. Well, all right. Well, let's see. Any other questions?
Well, the one other thing I want to talk about is the coaching changes potentially.
Oh, yeah.
New Muschamp's coming in.
Yeah.
And Melvin Smith told people he's not going to be back. He's the cornerbacks coach. We hired away from Mississippi State originally.
Mm-hmm.
So that leaves a vacancy for an assistant coach on defense. So that makes you think Tavarius Robinson is going to come from Florida probably to be the cornerbacks or secondary coach. And there's also rumors that, you know, Harbison may stay or may get fired. And then also that Rodney Garner could, you know, maybe he stays, but gets moved to another position. Like maybe he's the tight end special teams coach or something.
That was what was interesting to me. Was I'm just totally spitballing, as they say here. I could see it playing out where Muschamp says, I don't want Rodney Garner. I have somebody else in mind or something like that. And mm-hmm. Gus says, well, I don't want to fire him. And so Gus moves him to offense.
Yeah. And I don't, this year, I mean, again, the defense was very disappointing and things, they didn't perform well. And the defensive line was a big disappointment, but I mean, Rodney Garner has a track record of being successful, and I don't know what's going on there.
And recruiting, if nothing else.
Yeah, he's an excellent recruiter. So you sure don't want to lose him. Would he go somewhere else? Would he leave Auburn if it was, you know, moved to offense or if he was told he had to do that?
I don't know.
But, I mean, I understand if you're Muschamp, you want to have your guys. I mean, mm-hmm. Gus is saying it's your defense, do whatever the hell they want to, but you're accountable for it, I'd say. And clearly, Muschamp and Garner know each other.
Yeah.
You know, from the past and stuff. So I don't know if there's bad blood or communication there or what, but so we'll see. I think it definitely looks like Tavarius Robinson is coming, which is excellent because he's an excellent recruiter and because Florida's defensive backs played a heck of a lot better than ours did the last couple of years. Yeah. So, That would be good. So we'll see if there's other changes.
I just hope that there's not going to be some kind of I even hate to say it out loud, but I have this weird feeling that this could work out great or this could actually, you know,
blow up in our face.
I feel like the chemistry has to be right, and I just hope they can get the chemistry right and not make decisions now that I don't know. Somebody tweeted a picture of Muschamp walking into the stadium yesterday. Did you see that?
Mm-hmm. No.
They tweeted a picture of Muschamp walking in through the crowd and people are high fiving him. And then they zoomed in and zoomed in and zoomed in on his eyes. Mm-hmm. And he looked like a creature that was trapped in a cage and didn't know where the exit was. He didn't look like, hey, how y'all doing, War Eagle? He was kind of like, oh, my God, what am I doing here? And I thought, please, I hope this is just an anomaly and a funny thing about the picture. And he's not going, oh, my God, what have I done? You know, the chemistry has to be right on a coaching staff is all I'm saying.
Sure, it does. I think that's – I'm not worried so much about that. I think Muschamp was probably like, good gosh, I'm just here to – you know, watch the game, give some commentary. I'm not trying to be the center of attention or whatever. So I'm not even official, you know, officially on the staff yet. So,
yeah. Well, just something to think about. So,
sure. No, it's important. And clearly, there was stuff going on this year, you know, communication, other issues that affected how the defense performed. So, but I mean, again, in the big picture, long term, here's how I feel about it. Our defense is going to be much better for the next couple of years with Will Muschamp as coordinator. We're going to allow fewer points and fewer yards. And with Gus and Rhett running the offense and the talent we have on offense, we're going to score plenty of points. And that's going to give Auburn a much better chance to win a lot of those games.
Let's just hope it works out that way. I certainly hope.
Yeah.
So. I certainly hope so. Did you have thoughts about the playoffs? And then, you know, I went on that rant when you had to kind of run early, and I thought maybe you had some follow-up thoughts about how it played out.
I mean, to me, the one thing I want to say about the playoffs is I mean, I think I'm delighted that we have a playoff, and I'm happy that it, you know, that the committee took it seriously and really evaluated teams the way they did. And I like that. The thing that I really appreciate, I'm not sure a lot of other people did before this, is the non-playoff bowl games, how the playoff committee took those and seeded those kind of. Because to me, the thing I hated about the BCS was all the other games besides the championship game with all the conferences locked in and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It had gotten very boring and a lot of bad matchups that nobody cared about.
That's true.
And I think this year, with the shakeup in the bowl lineup and the committee taking over, I thought the other big bowl games were all really good and really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I thought, you know, I mean, we're talking about like TCU Ole Miss and Georgia Tech Mississippi State, or, you know, even like the Baylor Michigan State was a fun matchup.
Oh, yeah, it's a great game.
You know, so I think, you know, and then even like Arizona Boise State turned out to be a really fun game.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I think in that sense, what they did really worked. That part of it really worked, I thought. So I enjoyed that. And I really appreciate that because I hated, you know, God, we always had the BCS games were spread out over 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You had one every night where you're staying up till 1 o'clock in the morning, got to get up and go to work the next day. And it was, you know, and then you get the Fiesta Bowl would be like Connecticut versus some really good team or whatever. Nobody would care. So I think this was much better than that kind of system.
And I want to say the thing I thought that they did that was the best, the thing that really just made this extra special, was putting the two semifinals on the same day, back to back, and on New Year's Day. I mean, they could, you know, they could have so easily, and I don't, if they do add extra rounds to this, then they'll do this, they'll move it forward. They could have so easily had one semifinal on like a Monday night, and one on like a Wednesday night or something, you know, mm-hmm. 2 weeks before the national championship game or something. But to have them both back to back on New Year's Day was awesome. That was great.
It really was. It was so fun to watch.
It made it such a great football day instead of just, you know, in the past, New Year's Day had, well, let me jump back two steps. Two steps ago, you go back to like the 70s, the 80s, New Year's Day was the day that the big bowls were played and somebody was going to be declared national champion. There weren't going to be any consequential bowl games after January 1st. January 1st was the end of the line. And either the Orange Bowl winner, the Sugar Bowl winner, the Fiesta Bowl winner, the Rose Bowl winner, somebody, probably not the Rose Bowl winner, somebody was going to be named national champion as of the night of January 1st, okay? Then with the BCS and everything, we got into this weird system where January 1st became just a slightly above average bowl game day.
Yeah.
And that was really disappointing because New Year's Day, for our younger listeners out there who don't know this, New Year's Day used to be the thing. It was the bowl day and it was the end. And so it was really kind of sad to see New Year's Day losing a lot. I mean, New Year's Day had basically turned into the day of like the Rose Bowl in the afternoon and either like the Sugar Bowl or the Orange Bowl or both at night. And maybe none of them meant anything.
Yeah.
They had no consequence at all. The only game that mattered was the BCS game on like January 10th.
Yeah.
So now we're back to January 1st having real consequence. Lots of games and games that really matter. And we still have the, you know, the national championship game still to play, But this is a lot more of a consequential New Year's Day than what we've had the last 10 or 12 years, don't you think?
Absolutely. And I love how they crammed kind of a lot of big bowls on a New Year's Eve and New Year's Day together.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting seeing some games on New Year's Eve we don't usually normally have seen on that day.
And then the other part is I need to throw this out there. Next year, and I think in the year after that, the semifinals are going to be on New Year's Eve.
When is that? What now?
Next year, and I think the year after that, the semifinals are going to be on New Year's Eve.
Well, what are they going to do on New Year's Day then?
A bunch of regular bowl games. I mean, but like the games that aren't the – like the Rose Bowl won't be a semifinal next year, so it'll be on New Year's Day.
Oh, okay. All right.
You know what I'm saying?
I see. Right.
And the Sugar Bowl won't be a semifinal, so it'll be – maybe it'll be New Year's Day night or whatever. So, and the other games will, you know, it'll be the Sugar Bowl will just be what it's supposed to be, like the SEC versus the Big 12 or whatever. And the game, whichever bowl games are the semifinals next year, will be, on New Year's Eve.
They'll be in
not
their,
sure about the time slots, but
they'll be in there like their regular time, like they were this year. They'll just be more consequential or something. I mean, like I know the Peach Bowl at some point gets it, right?
Yeah, but no, I think they'll do the exact same thing that this year, where it'll be like a 4:30 game and an 8:30 game on the East Coast.
Okay,
and ended up being a 9 o'clock game. So
interesting.
I think they'll do that, but again, so this is important. If you're thinking about next year's New Year's Eve party, you got to take this into account.
Absolutely. Oh my goodness! Yeah. Wow. Okay. So. Well, I'm glad they did it this year at least. I hate if they're not going to do it in the future.
And I think it's going to – no, some years it is going to be, but I think part of it is the – like the Rose Bowl is always going to be on New Year's Day at the same time.
Right. So, you don't want to have – you don't want to have the two semifinals and the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl all played like on the same day.
They're not ever going to do that.
Right. Okay. Well, that makes sense, I guess. That makes sense. All right. I can let that slide then. All right.
Sure.
All right. Any other thoughts regarding the bowls or Auburn or anything we haven't touched on? We've been pretty comprehensive, I think, at this
point. No, I think we've covered a lot. But I think it's, you know, we'll wait and see what happens in the next couple of weeks with players going pro or not going pro. And then we'll, you know, look at the, you know, we'll do a kind of another podcast down the road, kind of wrapping up this season, looking forward to next year more comprehensively. And then we'll get into it. Then it'll be recruiting and it'll be spring practice and, you know, we'll have more fun basketball stuff to talk about. So,
well, what have we learned today and over the course of the last day or two? I mean,
you know, we've learned Florida State sucks.
but we already knew that.
It was really enjoyable seeing them get their pants pulled down national TV.
It was indeed. I agree. I think that the exposing of the criminal inadequacy was a highlight of the last few days. I think we've learned that at some point yesterday evening, a whole lot of guys suddenly quit making out with their sisters to gawk at the TV in shock as Ohio State took the lead and held on and won that game. And I think we've learned that it'll be fun to look on eBay the next couple of days and watch them trying to refinance their houses that they mortgaged to get these tickets that they're not going to need now. So the banks of Alabama will be doing well. I think we've learned that really seriously that Auburn had a year that ended up being pretty disappointing, but we're not pushing the panic button yet. We think that Gus has got it under control. We think that Muschamp's going to make a big difference, and with a complete wholesale change of the team, I mean, I'm looking forward. You know, in other words, it's the way that things ended. I'm not disappointed and moping that we're losing. You know, the players we're losing. I appreciate what they did for us. They were awesome. They ride off into the sunset, and now I'm actually looking forward to some new blood and a new kind of approach, particularly on offense and on defense too. So,
yep, I think it's gonna be fun to watch, and I'm excited about it. And I still have a lot of confidence in Gus that we're gonna be competitive every year for the SEC title. So,
yep. All right. Well, we appreciate all of you that picked up copies of Decades of Dominance, Auburn Football in the Modern Era, to give away as Christmas presents and a few copies of Season of Our Dreams as well, and hope that your person you gave them to was happy to get them and enjoyed them. Don't forget to check out the sister show of this show, the White Rocket Podcast on iTunes and at Podbean, which is our sort of pop culture show. We just completed last week an episode about Frank Herbert's Dune that's up and people are listening to now. So otherwise, I guess we are to the end of this post-New Year's Day episode. So our time is up, and as always, we thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.